Ooh, wiggly eyebrow.
That's concerning.
No, that's slutty. Let's go.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
And welcome to the new season of Kamen Rider, well, new for us, Agito.
Or Miami Vice, based on that guitar riff. Because that was sick. I like that intro. Nice.
Oh, man. Kamen Rider Miami Vice? The armors are pastels?
No, that's Revice.
And missing socks?
Oh.
And they all have a Tom Selleck mustache on the helmet.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
Never seen Kamen Rider, recently seen it in Hawaiian shirts, boat shoes, and khaki shorts.
That sounds like an alternate world Gaim that I would want to see.
Just board shorts and the helmet. Well, it's been a bit of a break. We gave ourselves a breather in between the wrap-up of Kuga, and now we're starting Agito.
Since this is the start of a new series, and a good jumping on point for new listeners, I use text-to-speech because I lost my tongue to cancer and am very difficult to understand.
And we will continue to make up increasingly elaborate stories of this process, you know, instead of telling the real one throughout the course of the podcast.
The most recent one was a Faustian bargain with a sentient golem.
True, and before that it was Borg assimilation.
Similar, but different.
A similar. If you will.
We did receive some more fan mail.
We did?
Oh my jeebus, I'm so excited. And you waited to open it? Oh my god. Alright,
Stickers!
God, I love these stickers.
These
are spectacular. Trades geese.
Hold on, because there's a letter on this and I intend to read it.
Alright, but in your finest vaudeville.
Congratulations! No fear! No pain!
Oh, it's got a little dinosaur on it!
Got a little Godzilla on it. Dear Cody, Jared, and Jed, congratulations on finishing Kuga. Here's to many more podcast episodes to come. Phoenix. P.S. I meant to give you these stickers at Christmas, but they came super late. Here they are now, though.
Phoenix, we appreciate them anyway. This is really cool. Oh,
thank you so much, Phoenix. This is delightful.
It's going to go right on my laptop.
I still got to figure out where to put my other Kuga sticker.
Hey, we got one on the soundboard. I think it works really well.
True. What a great way to start off this new season.
Yeah. It's a good foot to step forward on.
Just an exciting note for us. Since the last time we recorded, we've had like just shy of 100 downloads. Because we were at about 460. We're now, as of just before we started recording, at 556.
That's incredible. We're spreading, growing, metastasizing.
Hopefully not that last one.
Oh. It's a benevolent podcast. Benign? Benign podcast.
That was the term you were looking for.
So, you want to give us the rundown on Agito?
So this was originally intended to be a sequel to Kuga, but the writers of Kuga felt it would make Godai's fight pointless, and so it was changed to this. The show says that the events of Kuga happened 2 years ago. This is not possible since the show is set in 2001 while Kuga is set in 2000. So Agito must take place in a universe where the events of Kuga happened earlier than they did in the show.
So this is the canon sequel to Kuga, but not the Kuga we watched.
Or time works differently in Japan.
Wow, they've learned how to condense 2 years into one?
Yeah, they just get annoyed and stop it when they're on a deadline. So same universe, though. The Rogue One, if you will.
Well,
Rogue One was fine. I didn't call it the Solo.
I wasn't going to say it. I liked Rogue One.
Rogue One was great. I didn't see any Bothans, though. That was the only thing that bothered me about it.
It's the same universe of a Kuga, just not the Kuga we saw.
So we'll have some similar vibes. Yeah, same writing team. But no, not same writing team. Okay. Kind of same writing team. Same writing team adjacent. One dude named Jason worked on both. Stop me when I get it right.
That one took me a moment. Mainly because I wasn't paying attention.
Agito is written almost exclusively by Inoue Toshiki, a prolific writer in Kamen Rider and other toku series. Only episode 28 was not written by him.
So we got a professional.
And a name that we have heard before.
Yes.
In Kuga, he wrote episodes 13 and 14, The first Jonichi story with Biringi, episode 18. The first episode with Jinoga Day, episodes 23 and 24 with Garima Ba, episodes 27 and 28 with Baimugi, and episodes 32 and 33 featuring Jared's favorite Bada Ba.
So this is the same person that did Mushroom Man?
But other episodes that we enjoyed.
Yeah, no, I mean, somewhere in the Bada to Mushroom Man spectrum. So I'm assuming we will likely get some more stuff we enjoy greatly and some more stuff that might be a little problematic. Yeah.
Cool.
Inoue has several idiosyncrasies in his writing, and when discussing them you will hear this sound.
Oh boy, we get a bit!
I love a good sound cue. Can you play it during the actual episodes while we're watching as well?
If you want to watch Ajito, the first two episodes are available on YouTube, and there is a version available from Amazon Prime, but it requires a second subscription fee, and the subs are underwhelming. There are other less legal means to watch it, but we cannot officially condone such actions.
Yes, we definitely wouldn't openly condone piracy of any type.
Certainly not, even when it is the morally right thing to do.
Yeah, even if I do already have the parrot, the eye patch, and the peg leg.
That's just because you really like Halloween costumes.
It's the best holiday. Are we ready to get after it then?
Yeah, I think let's, you know, just jump into the new season.
I am super excited to get started.
So we're going to go watch Kamen Rider Agito, Episode 1, The Warrior's Awakening.
Episode 1 was written by Inoue Toshiki and directed by Tasaki Ryuta. It originally aired January 28, 2001. A jump to the sky turns to a rider review.
Oh man, it's so fun to be back.
Absolutely. We're just straight into the action. Not one spidery butthole mouth, two suits of armor in the first episode, a whole cast of characters that definitely aren't just pale imitations of our previously fleshed out cast. Shall we get right into it?
I think we should. So we start with a stormy sky and a radio announcement going over the typhoon that has happened, and we cut to a beach. The storm has passed, and junk collectors, maybe they're rescue workers, hard to say, are going around and collecting stuff while a kid runs around kind of half-playing.
With a broken glass of water.
Yeah. Maybe he's trying to use it as a magnifying glass.
That's what I was thinking, too. Like, he's looking through it, trying to use it as, like, a weird telescope. You know, when you're a kid and you just do fun stuff because things are fun.
Yeah. And he finds a weird kind of cross-shaped metal thing.
The world's most intricate Tetris piece made out of robo nipples.
And he calls his grandpa and the other salvager over, and all of a sudden one of the roulette wheel things start spinning.
No, do not let that little shit off the hook. He touched it immediately.
Oh, you're right.
Fabian!
Exactly. Like, put that shit back where you found it or so help me. Like, immediately. Continuing our proud commentary track tradition of watching series where they just don't think about the consequences of just touching the ancient artifact.
So yeah, I touched the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Touches it, and one of the roulette wheels nipple things start spinning.
Got him to say nipple. All right, we're off to the races.
And we get the opening credits, but it's literally just like the title card and a bit of a soundbite. I'm guessing we'll probably next episode actually get the full opening theme.
Probably.
It's fairly typical in first episodes of series, both live action and in anime, to not have the opening theme. And from there, we cut to a practice room. And it is worth noting that this is a training facility for the squad.
Others against drunk drivers. Sorry, I got it wrong. Squad against identified life forms.
What was that third word you said?
Unidentified?
There we go.
With a UN in front of it, for
yes.
Sure?
Yes.
Sure, Jan.
Squad against unidentified life forms. So this is part of this was supposed to be a sequel to Kuga.
Mm-hmm. So I really do like this concept. And like, we go through it a little more as the episode progresses and gets a little more fleshed out. But the idea the humans have continued to develop unidentified life form measures to the point where they've developed power armor. So a normal person can hopefully function on a level to stop the next iteration of this coming. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah. These are war crimes that not even Inokita could dream of.
Only Iron Man achieves war crimes on this scale.
And we see a suit of armor.
This is Kamen Rider G3, Hikaru Makoto, played by Kaname Jun, with suit action from Ito Makoto. Kaname shares common ground with Utajiri Joe, Go Die, in the series Juhan Shutai. He also appeared in the tokusatsu film Kashern.
Ooh.
Who's in Kashern? Huh, you showed me that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah. That dude bit way too many people, so they put the big harness on him.
So, yeah, we see that Kamen Rider G3 is walking down into a dried-up kiddie pool.
With the G3 system, he has a punching power of 1 ton, a kicking power of 3 tons, a maximum jump height of 10 meters, and can run 100 meters in 10 seconds. Its gun is the GM-01 Scorpion.
So he's still a little under Mighty Kuga's power.
He's comparable to growing Kuga, but still, to give a normal, everyday human being the ability to be growing Kuga?
Yeah, that's pretty dope.
And also, you know, gun.
We've combined the best parts of Godai with the best parts of Ichijo. Complex fighting techniques and enhanced physical capabilities and firearm. He's a masterpiece.
Lived as though we dared to dream. They shoot some dodgeballs at him.
Mm-hmm. Whatever that weird floaty sphere was from Star Wars.
He dodges the first three and they slam into the wall hard enough to sink into the concrete.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, there's some force there. He gets hit in the hand by one and that seems to stun him a bit. But then he catches the fifth one and drops it to the ground. Draws his gun and just starts shooting them.
Headcanon. He just got a little annoyed he missed one, so just shot the rest of them coming out of the machine. Yeah, was not the exercise.
No, he was supposed to, like, punch them out of the air, but got pissed.
Yep. Indiana Jones style.
While he is doing this, we have some people in another room monitoring his progress.
Ozawa Sumiko is portrayed by Fujita Tuko, and Omuro Takahiro portrayed by Shibata Akiyoshi. The higher-ups, while appearing throughout the series, are never named.
We have our ambiguous G-men in the background.
Just making sure. Sumiko's the girl on the headset, and Takahiro's the guy.
Yes.
Cool.
Tracking.
Sure, Jan.
So they're discussing how the training goes. Sumiko is also talking to Makoto. He shoots, I think a total of like 6 of them in a row, and Then they're like, all right, exercise is done. We get a brief glimpse of a screen showing like the systems for the armor, and we get a tally of what his bullet count is, and it says 66, but there's no visible clip on this thing.
Yeah, there's like no extended mag. It just, I guess, holds 60 something rounds.
Maybe it's like a shuriken pistol where it's a solid cylinder and it just shaves off little bits to launch.
Oh, it's like one of the Mass Effect guns,
or it could be a beam rifle. We don't see ammunition.
No, it's definitely ejecting. No, it's ejecting shell casings. It's a ballistic weapon. Just a very small bullet. Teeny tiny.
TARDIS ammo capacity.
The magazine's bigger on the inside.
Yes. So as they're going over this, he takes off the helmet. We see it is, in fact, just a person.
How cool was that helmet transition, though?
That was pretty cool, seeing it.
So good.
Yes, I did the hand gesture. I know it makes for terrible podcasting. No, but
it definitely zooped. Like, that came across well. Yeah.
From there, we cut to the research lab where we get, I guess, is this season's Inokita?
Yeah.
Nkumo Sakaki, portrayed by Takazawa Ryoko.
Sakaki is discussing with one of her assistants about progress stuff. Makoto comes in. She starts talking with him and says that they found this thing. A reference had been made to H-01. We don't, at the time, know anything about it. We then see that weird ultimate original from which all Tetris bricks have come
from. Progenitor brick.
Primarch and Progenitor.
And they did exactly what you should do with any of your weird, esoteric, potentially alien relics and brought it home.
Did you note that it was referred to as the O-Parts Lab?
The O-Parts?
I did not. My mistake.
I'm missing something.
Out of place artifacts.
Oh.
U-parts are things found in unusual context based off known historical fact. They are popular in fringe sciences and paranormal speculation.
Love that there's a whole lab devoted to that.
Does it happen that frequency that they have governmental funding?
I mean, they've devised a task force in case the Gurungi ever come back. I'm willing to accept this.
The O-Parts Research Lab's entire job is to make sure nobody else absorbs a belt and becomes God.
Does that mean they have the Goram there since we know it didn't turn into sand?
Yes, but it's an alternate universe Goram, so it's a unicycle.
Scarab unicycle.
Yeah, Godai was called Go Live in that one.
Bombastic side eye.
You missed me.
Criminal offensive side eye.
And here we find out that H01 is one of the roulette wheels on this thing. And they've finally hooked up their computer to it and gotten some sort of AI algorithm to try and decode this thing.
Sure, that's how that works.
Yes, because opening the extra-dimensional puzzle box always works out well.
We're great in Hellraiser.
It starts spinning. We cut away to a bunch of kids just playing soccer. And ball gets kicked out of bounds. One girl goes to go get it and stumbles over a pair of glasses. She stops and picks up the glasses and looks around, and there's a decent-sized oak tree behind her.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so there's a person dead stuffed into the tree.
Oh yeah, just origami folded into this large hole in the tree.
Yes, it bears repeating. He's not on the tree, he is stuffed in the tree. And rightly so, she screams, and we cut away. And from here we go to a... Man, it's gonna take me a bit to get used to saying this name.
Jōhoku.
Jōhoku University, which, for those of you familiar with the original Kamen Rider, was the name of the university in episode 1 and no other time.
Really?
Yes, after episode 1, the name of the university switched to Jonin, which is, of course, what Kuga's university was.
So that's the timeline split.
Yes.
Somebody changed the name of the university and we got a parallel dimension.
So, yes, this alternate version of Kuga took place in the world where it was still Jōhoku University.
Okay, we're establishing a good headcanon.
And here we see...
Misugi Yoshiko is played by Masu Takeshi. Masu shares common ground with Utajiri Jo, Godai, Inkao and Shinobi, Heart Under Blade. Katsurayama Shingo, Ashijo, In Marks No Yama and Beauty or Beast. Kitaro, Pops, In the City Mayor is Dead. And Kaname Jun, Hikawa, in the world which is neither white nor black, Panda Laughs, Ryamadan, Last Present, and Udon.
That was a lot there at the end.
I was just hearing individual words there for a minute.
Yeah, same. And he is discussing a thesis proposal from one of his students about human X abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're wanting to write a paper on superpowers? And the student genuinely, without a shred of irony, is like, do you not think it's a good idea?
Like, homie, we live in a world where there are literal superhumans. It's been documented. We have them on footage. It seems a good area of study.
His response is, no, it's not a bad idea, but I think you should do something else for your thesis.
Government already got to him. He's trying to suppress the people.
And as they're talking, a random person walks in.
Tsugami Shoichi is played by Kashu Toshiki. He tread the common ground of Kishiko-san Kakari Yoshiki Takeshi series, Shindo Takayu Hayabusa 1/60 bio number Cave along with Pops for Karuga. He would also appear alongside Masu again in Betty Numiko Horitsu Jimusho and its sequel.
I can't tell if that was a brain aneurysm or made me have a brain aneurysm.
Cancel him.
Okay.
So... Shuichi comes in and is dropping off some books for Yoshiko, and then he asks what he's doing for dinner, and Yoshiko's like, well, are you cooking? This whole conversation is weird and uncomfortable.
At least it was more for me. Yeah.
Because Shuichi's like, yeah, I am going to cook tonight, and Yoshiko's like, oh, well, I'm going out for dinner. And Shuichi kind of dejectedly leaves.
Yeah, Yoshiko with like the biggest petty bitch energy there for a second too.
And the students are like, so who was that? Is that like another student or your boyfriend or your child? They specifically say, is this your kid? His response is just, oh no, he's someone who's living with me for now.
That's suspicious.
Yeah, they fucking...
That's weird.
It's super uncomfortable, and clearly there is a imbalance in power between these two.
There is.
I don't like it at all. And so as Shuichi walks down the steps and a random brass quartet is playing, another character in a very distinct red leather outfit gets off of his bike and starts walking the opposite direction up the steps.
Yeah, he's got anime hair. He's definitely going to be important.
Ashihara Ryo, portrayed by Tomoe Yusuke. Tomoe would later appear in Godzilla X Mechagodzilla and Godzilla X Mothra X Mechagodzilla, Tokyo SOS.
He was in Tokyo SOS? Oh, holy that one, shit.
That one you knew.
Yeah, my brain picked out those keywords pretty good. Even through Mocha Godzilla.
Oh no, she didn't!
I'm gonna fuck with you about it because it's funny, not because I care.
So they pass each other. It almost looked like they were going to, like, clink motorcycle helmets. But after a couple steps, Ryo stops and turns around and looks back, but Shuichi just sort of keeps on walking.
All right, I'm liking these dings. Gives us some stuff to figure out.
So we then follow Shuichi, and he is walking down the street pushing the motorcycle. And a voice calls out to him, and a girl runs up.
Kazuya Mana is played by Akiyama Rina.
And Mana asks if he remembers anything. And that brings us to this season's first, Tropusatsu. Amnesia. Because as we're about to find out, Shuichi has amnesia. So it is worth noting that we are specifically discussing fictional amnesia and not real-world amnesia here. Because in fiction, amnesia tends to work one way. It removes your memories of your personal identity. So you won't remember where you went to school, but you'll remember everything you learned there, somehow. It also tends to remove the memories of anything that might relate to the mystery of the story. So Shuichi is most likely connected to whatever's going on here, because he can't remember.
Damn, what a conclusion.
So there are a couple different forms of actual amnesia, and fictional amnesia tends to be retrograde, losing the ability to access old memories, rather than anterograde, which is losing the ability to form new memories.
Yeah, we mostly see this as a plot device when we want to drop a character in to a story that's already in progress. It's a very good vehicle for doing that, because then you're catching up on what that character's been doing rather than telling the story as it progresses. Can be a very interesting storytelling device. I'm reminded of the movie Memento, where that one character was getting tattoos of everything he learned because every 24 hours he would just blank and forget and reset.
That is, however, a rare instance of anterograde amnesia.
Yeah, that one was cool, though.
So typically in real life, amnesia affects roughly before and after the event that has triggered this. While long-term amnesia is a thing that can happen, it's nowhere near as common. And, of course, how you go about handling this in fiction and the real world are also two drastically different things. In fiction, usually the best way to get your memories back is to recreate whatever caused the memory loss to begin with. That is the exact opposite of what you want to do in real life. I'm not even a licensed psychologist, but I know this.
You mean you don't want to re-traumatize people who are so traumatized they forgot what traumatized them?
Yeah, it's not these two negatives cancel each other out.
I really need to stop doing therapy.
Well, imagine my shock.
Listen, you.
So, Mana continues talking with Shuichi, speculating on what his life might have been like.
And so will we.
And Shuichi is like, hey, I don't like thinking about this. I'm just kind of taking things one day at a time. And she ends on a note of, hey, if it turns out you were rich in your life beforehand, you can marry me. Bye!
The dings are escalating, Jared.
So from there, we cut to an indoor pool, and Ryo is just sitting there on the bottom of the pool, exhaling in hello, rhythm to his heartbeat.
He'd be in a real emotional boy right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, he's clearly lost in his feels.
Drowning in them, one could say. Thank you. Thank you.
I just imagine like crawling in my skin playing. He's got waterproof earbuds on. It's just blaring. The coach, a teacher, we do find out it's his coach, comes in and is like, I thought I saw Rio coming here. Rio, you better not be drowning in that pool again.
You're making things up again.
Oh man, that's the first time that's been used on me.
Proud moment. I've passed the torch. Give me my torch.
So Rio comes up. He's not dead. Climbs out. He's wearing the smallest Speedo. Well, it's not the smallest, but there's really not much there.
I've worn smaller than that to Warhammer tournaments.
I choose to believe you.
He's a competitive swimmer. It's normal.
Yes, I know. But also, I'm also well aware that it's only there to be eye candy for the moms who are watching with their kids. Thanks, Odagiri effect.
What's not normal is how close this teacher sits to the student as he gives him his little talk in this next bit.
Yes.
I can taste your gum.
The coach gives him a bit of a pep talk about his return to competitive swimming, and we get a quick flashback of him getting hit by a truck.
Yeah, fucking isekai'd. But into his own life. That sucks.
So, inside the G3 trailer, we see Makoto coming out of the G3 suit, and it's really cool and kind of reminds me of the original Iron Man, only they've got people helping instead of the robot arms.
Yeah, it very much evoked the same vibe as like Tony Stark stepping out of his armor.
Which, given that this came out in 2001, means they did it first. It's really cool and a great use of practical, just let us see the costume design.
I was gonna say, up until this point, and continuing throughout most of this, there's one notable exception in terms of bad CGI, but the CGI and practical usage blurred together in this series is, honestly, it already kicks the crap out of Kuga. The marriage of the two into a cohesive whole is spectacular.
We also see that he's wearing like a full leather bodysuit underneath, which makes sense. That armor's gotta have like hella pinch points.
We have neoprene. Why is it leather?
It works better for filming. It doesn't bunch as much. The costume looks better.
What Jared means is, we're less likely to see his junk.
That too.
Hmm.
So while he is disrobing's not quite the right word, but
de-armoring.
De-armoring, is that an actual word?
Sure.
Sure. While he is de-armoring, they discuss the body found inside the tree, and there is the discussion like, oh, do you think that that could have been a ULF attack? Although, they drop the F and just refer to them as ULs. I'm not a huge fan of that. I'm going to continue to say ULF until otherwise.
You don't like ULs? You like ULFs?
Yes. We then cut to a random household, and a very stern businessman seems to be getting ready to go to work for the day. He goes out the door, and his wife hands him a stack of papers and a
billy club.
Yeah.
A truncheon.
Shoehorn, you idiots.
Was it a shoehorn?
That was really big to be a shoehorn.
It was just a honky bonker.
I was thinking he was just a weird guy. I wasn't gonna expect that to be a shoehorn.
That makes it worse because he's so disappointed and annoyed with his wife bringing him this object. I thought she was offering him an item to protect himself. And he was being a dick. But if she's offering the shoehorn so he can put on his damn old man shoes and he's still being that flippant, I'm glad to get shoved in a tree.
I'm so tired.
It's too early in the season for you to be using this sound effect, buddy. This is episode one. We got 50 more of these after this.
And yet.
I wasn't expecting that sass. I should have, but I wasn't. While they're doing this, the wife briefly looks over at the suspiciously large oak tree in the front yard.
With the suspicious...
And there's a...
Scarf.
Scarf? And the screen gets staticky, as if there's a ULF and their AT field is acting up again.
Surely not. This series is so anime, even the trees get action scarves.
And so as Mr. Sayaki leaves. We get a quick cut to the scarf and down to a pair of panther jaguar-esque hands, and they do a weird hand gesture thing.
Yeah. Bro, it's right on, it's the same part in his chest. I'm not wrong. Not wrong. I'm stupid and correct.
But he has the one hand and he does the other over it.
Mm-hmm. It's a PG show, Jared.
How much of the manual do you want?
My answer is always none.
We'll get to it eventually. Hopefully, maybe.
Yeah, we're 10 minutes
no,
into this.
No, you're saying no, we don't get an explanation for this?
Of the kitty cat nipple rubbies that cause the artifact to tingle? Hmm.
Let's see how many episodes we can hold out before we ask for the manual.
Or before we lean so far into our own crazy theories that he corrects us.
I think that one's more likely to happen. So we quickly get a shot back to the lab. Makumo is looking over the progress of them trying to decode the lock on H01.
Yeah.
These all happen rather quickly in succession. We get the lab. We cut back to the pool. Events about to happen. We cut back inside to the Sayaki household, and Misaki finds another folder of papers that I guess this is what Mr. Sayaki actually was supposed to take with him, so she picks it up to go outside to give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
We cut to Mr. Sayaki walking past the tree, and Osei from Shin Megami Tensei grabs him.
The Panthera just takes this dude out by the face.
This monster is the jaguar lord Pantheras luteus. Pantheras comes from the genus name for the biggest cats, leopards, jaguars, tigers, and lions. I was unable to find an origin for luteus. Luteus is a reference to Scissor's jaguars, the first monster of V3, the second Showa series.
I think it's short for gluteus, just because that cat got ass. Baby got
bounced! Pantheras luteus.
Maximus.
God damn it, I'm going to have to do a Lord's Dex.
I'm shocked you haven't already started.
How was I supposed to start?
There's been a scarf on screen. You knew it was coming.
I didn't expect it to have such a ludicrous name.
Would you jot down that kitty cat?
Fine. Pantheras.
Gluteus. Capital G.
Luteus with an L. All right. First entry in the Lord's Dex. Look forward to the completed version at the end of the season.
A year from now.
Oh, no.
It's not long to complete a Pokedex.
Depending on how many entries there are.
Important to note that when Kitty Cat Man grabs the old dude, everybody else involved in the series starts having seizures.
We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Also, like, Halo-esque disc of light forms over his head?
Yeah, looks like a little miniature galaxy hovering above his cranium.
Do you want the manual yet?
No, we're going to wildly speculate.
So the kitty cat rubs his nipple, galaxy forms over his head, two boys have seizures, and he chokes out an old guy and stuffs him into a tree. We don't need a manual. We have everything we need.
You are slightly getting ahead of us. Because we get another shot of the artifact spinning. We get a shot of Shuichi vacuuming, another shot of the pool. They dive in, start swimming. Mr. Sayaki gets grabbed. Monster snaps his neck after a bit of a struggle. And that's when the weird high-frequency noise starts, and we get quick cuts to show that Shuichi and Ryu are having seizures.
Not great for Ryu, considering he's in the middle of a pool.
Yes. And grabbing his stomach. Particularly, like, belt level.
Almost like, you know what? It's probably not worth speculating on. It probably won't amount to anything.
Surely there's not a magical stone in his tummy as well. Why did you make that face? Oh god, there's a magical stone in his tummy.
There's a magical belt in that teenager's stomach.
Spoilers.
They just need to stop eating these. Just stop putting stuff in your mouth, kids. Not healthy.
We flash between all of these scenes, and finally we get Miss Sayaki seeing her husband stuffed into a tree.
God. Okay, so I really like the steps they've taken with the monster design. And we're still fairly early, but this is a breath of fresh air compared to Kuga. We've got full body patterning. The thing is very clearly what it's meant to be. Like, this lord is meant to be a panther, jaguar, kitty cat. It's a kitty cat. The eye crest's even pretty cool. He stuffs him into a hole in a tree. That's how a jaguar stores its food for later. Like,
is it really?
Yeah.
I
Jaguars, to protect their kills, will kill their prey and drag it up a tree and stuff it in a hole in the tree or find a branch to stuck it into, just so other big predators like hyenas and things can't get to it. That's how they store their food.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, like,
did you know that before this episode started?
I did. Okay. I watch a lot of nature documentaries.
Gotcha. I wouldn't have put it past you'd be like, nope, I was Googling it while we were watching.
Do kitty cat stuff man in tree hole in nature?
That's how you end up on a different kind of list.
The internet told me that based on my query, my warranty on my vehicle is expired and I need to renew it.
This is rather simple in physical design, but well done. There is another issue we'll discuss later.
Is it the lack of their heads being able to turn?
But I will say, the use of colors mimicking the animal and being whole body and also not just brown.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. The reflectiveness of the eyes when we had light shown on it, that was a cool touch.
Yeah, the costume had eye shine. That's freaking cool.
The scarf's a nice touch. It's missing the two swords that Osei's supposed to be carrying, but, you know, credit where credit's due. Maybe they wanted to just file the serial number off. Yeah,
we're like two Chinese hook swords and a bad pun name for every Street Fighter character. Like, we're that close, boys.
Hojo's another cop, right?
Hojo's that being from Final Fantasy VII.
Yes. And we now get two officers.
Hojo Toru, played by Yamasaki Jun. Yamasaki has common ground with neurotic Izumi, Sakurako, in Fragments of the Sun and Snow.
I'm telling you, man, the syllables are blurring together. I thought I heard the word. Did you hear the word erotic?
No.
Do you at least smell toast?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, no.
His partner is Kono Koji, portrayed by Taguchi Kazumasa. Taguchi shares common ground with Kotaro, Pops, in State of Emergency. Ken and Jun, Hikawa, in Ninjio Sashichi Turiminoko and Lady the Last Criminal Profile. As well as Masu Takeshi, Professor Misugi, in Tales of the Unusual Fall Special 2001.
They so love the names of some of these.
Yes, they're wonderful.
So we've got Hojo and his partner.
Kono. Hojo Kono.
I'm guessing these are going to be our Sakurai and Sugita.
Well, Hojo seems to think that he's Sherlock and the star of the show.
Hmm.
But we'll get to that in a minute, because Hojo and Kono are just sort of standing outside looking up at the tree and being like, huh, he got stuffed in a tree the same way his son did.
You know what? There really is a guy stuffed in that tree. I thought they were lying. Damn.
Inside the household, Hikawa is not doing a good job of comforting Miss Sayaki. Yeah, he's kind of a jerk to her, having an emotional breakdown over the fact that now her child and her husband have been...
Good, it's not just me.
...murdered and stuffed in trees. He can't even, like, apologize, but is like, when you're done being hysterical, here's my card, give me a call.
Oh, come on. Okay, he paraphrased, but that's the vibe.
I'm only being slightly hyperbolic.
I never pay attention, and I picked up on that.
But then Hojo comes in and is like, you're from Seoul. What the hell are you doing here? And Yukawa's like, I may be from Seoul, but I'm also a cop. I have a right to be here. There's a brief sort of, what are you thinking, that this is a ULF attack? Look, two people have been murdered and stuffed inside trees. Yes.
Bitch, are you dumb?
Yeah, I'm hoping that's a signifier for ULF attack and not a common enough occurrence that routine police work solves these.
That'd be such a shocking calling card for a regular serial killer.
The Parkside stuffer.
Nope, don't like that.
Not at all. So we now cut to the hospital and see that Ryo's in a bed. He's got an oxygen mask on. And a doctor who is not this show's version of Tsubaki. He's far too dour and straight-laced.
Nope, no necklace, not sexy. It's fine.
He's not moonlighting as a serial killer. But he talks it over with the coach and is like, hey, you know, he's showing all these signs of having overexerted himself. What happened? And the coach is like, he wouldn't have done that. He was getting ready for a big meet. He knows better than to overexert himself. And we quickly get a shot of Ryo's hand twitching to kind of emphasize the point that the doctor had been trying to make.
They mentioned that his muscles are overheating and he's having like little spasms.
Yeah. And then we cut outside a house and Shuichi and some kid.
Misugi Taichi, played by Tanabe Tokimasa. Tanabe tread the common ground of Shinsengumi and House of Himiko with Utajiri Jo, Go Dai. He also appeared in Goemon with Kanan Jun, Hikawa.
First one, Shinsengumi? Oh, that's cool.
So Shoichi and Misugi are trying to pull a radish out of the ground. And they finally do, and there is some awe at the size of this radish.
Hey-o!
Somebody strokes the radish with their hand.
Yeah. Shoichi strokes the radish while saying the secret to getting it to grow so big is love.
Hey-o!
Damn it. You didn't have to put those words together in that pattern.
Yes, I did. That's what happened in the show.
Yeah. Make sure to stroke your radishes, kids.
The commentary track does not condone.
We don't not condone it.
Okay, I retract my statement.
Yeah, stroke or unstroke your own radish. We're not here to judge.
Not that, at least. Mana's there. Does she say something? I genuinely don't remember. I think Shoichi hands her the radish before he walks away.
Yeah.
We cut to police headquarters. Hikawa's there. He gets a phone call from Miss Sayaki, who says she's ready to talk and that she thinks she might know something that led to the death of, you know, all of her loved ones.
Damn.
And then we cut to a park. It's probably a park. And Miss Sayaki is just standing there alone in the night, dressed in like a brown greatcoat. It's kind of stereotypical, like going out to have an affair outfit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while she's standing out there, Pantheris Luteus comes out, once again, makes the hand gesture thing. Halo appears again. Galaxy appears. The light above his head.
Yep.
And
Halo is right.
Oh, it is a halo? It's like a filled in halo. It's like a circlet. Yeah. It, I don't know.
I mean, we've seen different takes on halos in media.
Yeah, this would look almost like a portal to me. I don't know. I'm just trying to describe it in a way that our listeners, if they don't watch the episode, can like latch on to.
The sun disk of Ra, basically. But the hand gesture plus this appearing over their head really lends to a ritualized nature of this. These aren't random killings. This is some sort of...
No, this is a ritual of fuck that family in particular.
Yes. I don't know what this particular family did to piss off Osei, but... It's
something kitty cat related, clearly. There's a whole mob of kitty cat related villains just waiting in the wings to fuck up this family.
There's a bit of a struggle between the two of them, and when he finally snaps her neck, we get that sound again, and we cut to Shoichi and Ryo once again spasming in pain and holding their stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
Hikawa gets there shortly after, looks around, finds her stuffed inside a tree.
How are there enough trees with holes in them large enough to accommodate a human corpse in this kind of vicinity?
Maybe Kitty Cat makes the holes?
His tree sphincter expansion powers?
Is that really the most ludicrous thing you can think of?
No, but I wish I hadn't said it out loud.
Yeah, that's on you.
Yeah.
He sees her stuffed inside the tree, then sees Pantheris standing and is like, oh,
that's probably
so
related.
That's what one of those looks like. I think it's fairly clear. They've never seen a ULF other than, like, I'm guessing they've got binders going over the reports.
Yeah, this task force feels very much like they're well-equipped but not experienced, right?
Yes.
They put this together in the event that this happens, and now it's happened. It's all hands on deck. But everybody's still green at the actual combat aspects.
Yes,
of this.
Because in the next scene, when he radios in to the rest of the unit and informs them, hey, no, I've found these. They're real. This is what we have been training for. Omuro even says, like, we haven't gotten authorization to fully use G3 yet.
Womp, womp.
So, like, they've been testing this armor, but it's not cleared for battlefield use yet. In the park, Hikawa briefly engages with Luteus, and he just gets knocked away. He does try shooting him with his standard issue sidearm. We get a great shot of him pulling the gun out, and really, he looked the part of Ichijo for a moment.
I felt it. I felt it in my heart.
But we see the bullets just stop in midair and dissolve away into the aether.
Yep, that's not what you're looking for.
Yeah, this isn't the hit the body and just fall to the ground like with the ULFs. This is they never even make it there. He gets picked up. He's in the trailer. We see Ozawa and Amura help him put the armor on because it is a multiple person job for him to get into G3.
Time for round two. I didn't hear no bell, you son of a bitch.
Then he gets on the bike, and we learn that the bike's name is the Guard Chaser.
I like the name of the bike a lot better than the fact that it blares a police siren when he rides around.
The Guard Chaser's max speed is 350 kilometers per hour, or 217.5 miles per hour.
It's clearly meant to be like this is an evolution of the Beat Chaser, but I gotta admit, visually, it kind of looks a step back. The Beat Chaser looked so good.
Yeah, everything they've got is like a stripped down, municipally urbanized version of what Kuga had available to him.
Yeah. And we get a scene of the ramp being lowered out the back of this van and dropping to the ground, and the cycle being launched. Well, launched is a strong word. Slowly lowered out the back.
Had little dolly wheels on the back so it didn't send up sparks, even though that would have been cool.
Yeah, but the dolly wheels are practical. Truly a municipal force has thought about this.
They allocated a small task force over a weekend to workshop those ideas.
Well, they didn't want to, you know, risk putting grooves in the pavement. The sparks accidentally setting something on fire is collateral damage.
Subcommittee after subcommittee.
Everything had to be approved through the bureaucratic process, and that's how they ended up with those dolly wheels on the bottom of it. And also the fact that it's a very slow lower of the bike and not a launch.
Bro, they love the slow ramp. Yeah, here is the part at which we got to my literal one gaffe about the CGI in this. That was the worst green screen we've seen since Kuga out the back of that vehicle. Like, they're supposed to be driving on the road while they lower the ramp so he can deploy, like, as they're on the way to location. But it just looked like those old 50s and 60s movies with people sitting in a stationary car just bouncing up and down in their seat as, like, a roll of film went past them.
It reminded me of the Henshins between Godai and Bada during their episodes.
In their defense, this is a very dangerous stunt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
We then cut to a construction site, the abandoned factory that we so know and love.
It's good to be in a familiar place.
And Hikawa now in the G3 armor. And let's take a look, because we haven't really discussed what the G3 armor looks like.
Yeah.
It's very cyborg or robotic-esque, and it's almost entirely blue, but like a silver chest.
Yeah, and blue and silver aesthetics.
It makes sense for a police force to be using these colors.
Yeah.
It looks almost like Kuga, but Kuga by way of Gundam.
Yeah, yeah.
Because instead of the horn crest, it's a V-fin.
I really like how this outfit fits together aesthetically. You do get police vibes. You get utilitarian vibes from it. You know, Kuga had a lot of affectation and design. The gold, the bangles, the symbols and things. This is, it's a uniform.
We do get the Saul's crest up on the chest, and there's a belt that I guess shows off his battery supply, because we do see a meter fill up on it.
And it did go down after he got hit, and they said battery at 80%.
Yeah, the task force clearly looked at, like, here's old footage of Kuga, let's make a close approximation. Something that potentially in the future maybe we could mass produce.
Well, this is also G3. Implication being this is the third iteration.
I mean, do we know for certain that G3 refers to the suit itself and not like some facet of it?
There's a G1 and a G2. Not that we see, but that exist.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll take that part of the manual.
And so he goes to fight, and he is more effective than he was outside of the armor, but he's not doing a ton of damage to Ludius. He's at least able to knock him around, but he's getting slammed around, and we keep getting this running commentary of the damage that is being done to the suit.
And the very first thing that happens to him is he gets his ass lobbed into a car, and the impact damages his battery and drops him to 80% efficiency, like, immediately.
That was another moment of CG, was just before he hit the car that I noticed. I'm like, ah, that didn't work as well as it could have.
I did notice that. Again,
it wasn't as bad, but it was a noticeable moment of, ooh. Yeah.
But they flipped back and forth between that practical effects and mirrored everything well enough that the 5 seconds of that shot worked well, even if, like, the 2 seconds that were the CGI didn't.
That's fair. Ludius also just sort of gently pushes a car at one point, and it explodes when it taps another car. I choose to believe that he's got Gambit's mutant power.
Ah, he imbued it with extra kinetic energy?
Yes.
Excellent. Or he's Cajun.
It could be both.
I love when this show has car blowing up budget.
I do too. The practical explosion effects are great. The fight's really good.
We're starting off on where I would consider some of our peak Kuga fight episodes were. Like, maybe it's just that we had the evolution from the simple fights to the complex fights, but this seems to be starting off on that caliber of combat immediately, and I'm here for it.
And as Hikawa is on the ropes, like, we've been informed that there is critical failure on the chest. We've seen that the arms and legs, most of the suit is damaged and in the red at this point. Another figure walks out.
Ba-dum-bum-ba-bum.
And they don't say it.
This is the titular Kamen Rider Ajito in his ground form. In this base form, he is a punching power of 7 tons, a kicking power of 15 tons, max jump of 30 meters, and can run 100 meters in 5 seconds. If his horns are deployed, his punching and kicking power are doubled. Its finishers are the boringly named Rider Punch and Rider Kick.
There's nothing wrong with the classics.
It's a little boring of a naming convention, but I loved when the horns folded out like that.
Mm-hmm. That sold me on the whole design.
Because the design, it's mostly like black and silver.
It's like a minimalist version of Kuga's final form.
Yes, but I still also viewed it as like, yeah, this is, as far as like a costume design, an evolution of it. Mm-hmm. But like, hey, we can't do something this elaborate for their base form. So let's take final form and scale it back, but make it look like something like, yeah, this is their start.
Very much enjoyed it.
And there's a very brief bit of skirmish between him and Ludius. And then his horns fan out. And that's such a minor touch, but it is so cool.
Don't forget the flashlight belt.
How could we forget flashlight belt?
His belt is just blinding illumination.
Yeah, when he shows up, we hear this like weird high-pitched sound. And then you just see a light. Looks like a headlight of a car wandering out of the darkness, and it's his belt buckle. And that belt sticks out a long way from his belt.
Yeah, when we see him in profile, that is out a sizable
distance. Bro, I thought the one from Gotchard was silly, but at least it had the scale. This one's just protrusive.
We do get a cool moment of like a car exploding in front of him and then him still walking through it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, love that they have car exploding budget. But yeah, so brief fight, horns fold out. He strikes a stance and I'm guessing it's the Agito symbol forms in light on the ground underneath him.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Swirls around and it's not a flashy kick, but the preamble makes it look a lot cooler. And Ludius goes skidding backwards from taking the kick.
Yeah, it was a cold fight. Like, there's no threats. There's no extraneous motion. He shows up, engages in combat, gauges his opponent's strength, switches his antenna to the correct form, assumes the position, and then kicks him. Like, I love this.
And Ludius's halo kind of brightens for a moment and then goes out. And he explodes.
And, oh, sweet God, good explosion effects.
Because it's a practical explosion. It is not CG.
Mm-hmm.
And Agito slowly turns around as it happens.
God, cool guys don't look back at explosions.
So as he dies, G3 kind of looks and sees Agito, but doesn't actually interact with him. And we see that there are two other Pantheras.
The rest of the furry force.
These are Pantheras Alpis and Pantheras Tristis. Like Ludius, I was unable to find origins for Alpis or Tristis, but they are based off a snow leopard and a black panther respectively.
Alpis seems alpine. That makes sense. He's the snow leopard one. I'm sure there's a naming convention here.
Well, Tristis sounds almost like Tristia, which is sadness in Latin.
And if it's supposed to be faux Latin, yeah, that makes sense.
While we are discussing Latin, agito actually means keep going in Latin.
Keep going? Okay. Interesting. And so with the other two Pantheris seeing the death of Ludius, that's the end of the episode. And so we've got a couple things. First, what do we want to pick to be our rating?
Tree holes.
Tree holes it is. And as a reminder, we are just going to be giving an overall score for the monster and for the episode. We will discuss various aspects, but we're not going to give individual scores for those. We will still be tallying up our individual scores to give the episode's score. So,
Ludius is our Zugman Ba, a basic flat starter monster. There is little interesting to him in personality, and his design is rather uninspired just being a jaguar man. The sculpt, it's possible he's a reference to Oz from the Megami Tensei franchise, but there is no confirmation of that. Sticking people in trees is certainly a unique killing method. I'll give him a 3.
I would agree for a first episode, it's a good, sufficient monster. I like that he looks like Osei, and compared with the Gorongi, the design shows that the monster design department has upped their game a little bit. It's still nothing phenomenal, but it is an improvement, and I like that. The killing is unique, but there isn't much to him, so I agree, a 3.
I'm going to tip it up to a 3.5 tree holes. It gives me a lot of hope that you're describing this our starter monster that is ostensibly more colorful than most of the monsters we saw in Kuga entirely as like middle of the road. That gives me a lot of excitement for the stuff we're going to see this series, because that means it's only up from here. I love thematic cohesion. So the fact that it is a panther type dude and he kills people and stuffs them in trees like a jaguar hoarding its prey for later. Yeah, 3.5. He gets a couple of extra points there, and I hope that trend continues.
So that should give us
3.166 tree hole.
He did the monster mash. The monster mash.
Ludius is certainly well sculpted. There isn't much to go off of here, which means no real reason to pass.
Jetty hasn't even considered the horrible ramifications of the raspy tongue.
I briefly forgot that the default was mash, unless yeah, there was reason not to.
The default is fuck it. Now, he opts out a lot, but it's important to note that while he has high standards, the default is fuck the creature.
You went first for monster. Do you want to go first again for episode?
The episode is fairly good overall. It sets up some mysteries and introduces us to our cast. It moves fast and covers a lot of ground. It's a good start. 3.5.
I think it is an interesting touch of this episode to not show us who Agito is. He's clearly one of two characters who are reacting, but they haven't told us which yet. I like that. Strong cinematography right out the gate. The combat was excellent. There's a lot to like about this for a first episode. I think a 4.
Yeah.
Tree holes.
Okay. I'm liking where we're headed. I like the more colorful enemies. I like that we have multiple writers and that we're blending some intrigue into this. So I'm going to go with a 3.5 as well.
So that gives us a 3.666 repeating, of course, tree holes for the episode. A good start.
Excellent. Excellent.
So it's great to be back in the swing of things. I'm looking forward to this. It's a nice start to the season.
Yeah, it's only up from here, for sure. I'm liking the character design. I like the environment that we've built. I'm looking forward to it.
So then join us next week for episode 2, Blue Storm. Does it count as isekai at that point? Because isekai means new world.
And oh, yeah. I like to think you get to watch the wheel spinning on all your potential futures and outcomes and watch it land on same shit, different day, and just get booted back to the sidewalk.
That didn't answer my question.
And I never will.
Touche.